I've taken, like, we've taken this, like, opening thing, this opening section to, like, talk about things that we're excited about typically these days. Like, and so one thing I will say very briefly is that 21 Pilots released another single called Next Semester, which is very good. It gives me big Scott Pilgrim vibes, which I love a lot. That's not important right now because I need to talk to you about something that I'm very actually super excited about. And that is Sparkling Ice Starburst flavor.
All right.
And I'm not even fucking kidding you. So Sparkling Ice, the flavored sparkling water company brand that makes sparkling water, released a Starburst line. They have cherry. They have all the four original flavors. They have cherry, strawberry, lemon, and orange. Zero sugar, 5 calories per bottle, which is a 17-ounce bottle. Obviously, no fat, no sodium, no carbs, no protein.
No bullshit.
It's just like a straight up drink. No bullshit, but it's got 15% of your daily dose of vitamin E, B6, B12, niacin, and biotin.
Hell yeah.
And it's fucking delicious. It tastes exactly like a Starburst. Like, even like, you know that thing that happens with Starburst, like when you take them out of the wrapper and you put them in your mouth and there's like that slight, like, it kind of tastes like the paper a little bit, but you like that.
Yeah. It's your admission.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? The drinks kind of replicate that flavor, which I think is insane.
That's funny.
So, yeah. So I'm a big, big, big fan of the Sparkling Ice Starburst. That's what I'm excited about this week.
It's nice to have something to enjoy.
And 21 Pilots, I guess.
Yeah. Second rate to the Sparkling Ice.
Yeah. Number one, Sparkling Ice. Number two, 21 Pilots. Number three, I'm going to Philly tomorrow or Wednesday.
Wow.
To be at WrestleMania, my first WrestleMania.
Is this the one that has the Rock at it?
Yes, The Rock is wrestling.
Great.
He is in a tag team match. He's teaming up with the current WWE heavyweight champion, Roman Reigns, to face the current world heavyweight champion, Seth Rollins.
Sure.
And his tag team partner, the number one contender to Roman Reigns' championship, the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes. And if The Rock and Roman win on night one of WrestleMania, which is on Saturday, then the match, Cody versus Roman on night two, the main event of night two, is going to be a bloodline rules match where anything goes. And I hope that's what it is, because it's going to be an overbooked mess and it's just going to be just a complete disaster, but it's going to be the most entertaining thing I've ever fucking seen in my life.
Probably.
The Warped Tour of Wrestling, WrestleMania.
The Warped Tour. I mean, honestly, like, here's my theory. I know a lot of people don't care about this, but I care about this. So you're going to have to sit and listen to it, fuckers. So what I think is going to happen is this. Night one, I don't know what's going to go down. Some people might interfere, but I think Cody and Seth are going to lose on night one of WrestleMania. That's very important to set up that night two is the Bloodline Rules match. It needs to be no rules. It needs to be chaos.
Yeah.
Roman Reigns is going to have the Bloodline. He's going to have Jimmy Uso. He's going to have Solo Sikoa. He's going to have The Rock. They're going to come out and do some shenanigans. They're going to interrupt people. And then I think that Jey Uso is going to come out and fucking cause some trouble and help Cody. I think that Sami Zayn's going to come out and help Cody. I think it's going to be the Avengers of people that Roman has screwed over.
Sure.
Coming to help Cody. And then The Rock is going to be the equalizer and he's going to be beating people down. And then glass shatters, out comes Stone Cold Steve Austin, who they've been teasing as being there and they've been talking about in the news as potentially being there.
Wow.
And I think that Stone Cold's going to come out and confront The Rock one last time and they're going to have a little Donnybrook, and then that's going to be what makes Cody win. To finish the story.
This decade-long ordeal between The Rock and Stone Cold.
Oh, my God. It's going to tie up so many stories. I think John Cena's probably going to be there to do something. I don't fucking know. But, like, my heart is set on Stone Cold coming to be the one that equalizes The Rock. And that's what I want.
That would be insane.
It would be insane.
Like, I don't, you know,
it would be insane.
I don't even follow wrestling anymore, but I understand completely the hype of fucking Stone Cold Steve Austin coming back.
Oh, yeah. WrestleMania is the biggest wrestling show of the year.
Yeah.
And this is the 40th one. It's WrestleMania 40. It's God insane. Damn. So it's cool that this is the one that I'm going to be going to.
No shit. Have yourself some Philly sandwiches.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I'm very excited about that prospect.
And their natural habitat. Steak.
It's actually funny. I'm flying in on Wednesday. And my friend that I'm staying with, that I'm going with, is still has to work. He's working in the office. And so I'm going to take a train from the airport to his office. And then I'm going to drop my stuff off. And then while he's working, I'm going to kind of like walk around the city and explore a little bit.
Sure.
And part of that's going to be, I'm going to get a cheesesteak, because of course.
Yes.
And then I'm probably going to go to, there's this donut place called Federal Donuts that has like this, like it has, apparently, according to Food Network, has Pennsylvania's best donut. So I'm going to give that a shot.
Fuck yeah. Probably has a constitution written on it.
Probably. 4 score and no, that's not the constitution. It's a fucking Emancipation Proclamation.
That is the Gettysburg Address. Yes.
That is the Gettys. No, it is. I even got the wrong. Damn. Wow, that was even the wrong speech. Give me all of the dumb books.
That's
all
good
this time. We haven't even started the full episode yet, and I deserve them all this week.
Hitting it hard and heavy.
Hard and heavy. Hard and heavy. Almost Nicolas Cage is going to steal that fucking donut.
Okay. Yeah, he will.
It's like, I'm going to steal the Declaration of Vinda Donut.
In the fucking donut. Oh, man.
In the fucking donut.
Hello, everyone. It's Monday morning. It's too early for this.
No. It's sensual. I like it. Keep going.
Yeah, if you've ever been a double bubble disco queen and headed to the guillotine, you may be due compensation. And we're not going to do anything about it.
If you or a loved one have suffered from being a double bubble disco queen, call this number now.
Please close the goddamn door, or don't forget to. Again, fuck this.
You didn't even say the name of the podcast. You didn't even say.
This is Adam and Sam at the Disco. I am mm-hmm. part of that title, being Adam.
Yeah, I'm Sam. This is so. Here's what you can expect for this episode and the next episode.
A bunch of bullshit.
It is. A bunch of bullshit, because we've done this once before and it was pure chaos, and I don't see that changing this time. No. It is 11:25 a.m. my time. It is 10:25 a.m. Adam's time. We're recording very, very early in the week, very early in the day, to make sure that we have episodes while I'm gone in Philly, because I won't be able to edit or publish the episode that comes out next week, or this episode, I think.
Yes, it will be this one.
Yeah, this episode. I won't be able to publish this episode if we don't do it like right now. So we're doing it. And that leads to chaos. And so here we are. Welcome to it.
We love it. Are we feeling victorious?
I think we are feeling victorious, because that is the song that we're talking about today. It is the first song of season 5, the first track off of Death of a Bachelor, the fifth studio album from Panic at the Disco, the first solo project from Brendan Urie. And yeah, we're here. It's crazy. Here's the thing that I'll say before we like really get into it, because part of my downfall is that we will record this podcast, and then I'm the one that edits it. So I will hear all the dumb shit that we say. Yeah. And then I will be like, wow, I should have said this thing. So I'm going to give myself an opportunity right now. Adam, when we were talking about like what genre we thought that this song or this album should be.
Yeah.
You stated, you're just like, I don't think it's rock. I think it's more alternative is what you said.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Alternative what, Adam?
It's alternative pop, please.
No, I don't think so.
It's the direction that pop goes when it goes punk.
Okay, sure.
No, it would definitely alternative have to be rock,
yeah, Adam.
For sure.
Which is a type of rock.
I guess. I about said Mormon and Sons.
Mormon and Sons. Mumford and Sons?
That one.
What about them? What does that have to do with anything?
What is their genre? Are they alternative rock?
I would say, well, I guess it depends on which era of Mumford and Sons, because if you're thinking about like Cry No More, Little Lion Man, I would say that's more like folk.
Yeah, that's fair.
Then, yeah.
I can dig that.
Yeah. But like they've been doing some different stuff recently that I don't really know how to categorize. So, but like the Mumford and Sons that I know you're thinking about, I would say folk.
Yeah,
for sure.
100%.
Yeah.
I try not to think about Mumford and Sons too long.
If I think about Marcus Mumford for too long, my brain explodes.
I'm more worried about the Mormons. Yes.
Oh, not the. Are they Mormon?
I don't know. I hope not. I mean, I don't know why they could be or couldn't be. I'm done.
Anybody could be Mormon. Your neighbor could be Mormon. You don't even know. If you see something, say something. You never know who's Mormon.
Could be real trouble in your neighborhood.
Could be real trouble in your neighborhood. They're fucking British, Adam. They're from London.
Oh, that's... Wow.
Yeah. That is, yeah. Yeah, well, their Wikipedia page lists folk rock as their first one. So folk rock, alternative rock, indie folk, Americana, and bluegrass are the genres on their page.
That all makes sense.
Also, this is false advertising because Marcus Mumford is obviously the front man for Mumford and Sons, and you would think, okay, that means his sons would be, but Ted Duane and Ben Lovett are not his children. Those are grown men.
He adopted them.
So what the fuck? He might have just to fuel the fire.
Yeah.
Like, so what game are you trying to pull? Because Marcus Mumford is 37. Okay. Ben Lovett is also 37. technically younger than Marcus Mumford by several months, but also 37. Ted Duane is 39.
Wow.
So who is Marcus Mumford trying to fool?
This is real weird.
You want to talk about messages?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. We got one on Love in the Middle of a Firefight from Erin Hewell that I'll actually let Adam read because she was being nice to Adam for once, which is rare. So we'll give Adam that moment if you want to read that.
Yeah. Yeah. It says, Adam, to have been stumbling and then come out with the line, I'm a walking thesaurus held upside down, is just amazing and so relatable. I stammered when I was little and I felt this deeply. Thank you. Erin, I stammer big. Not even when
big,
I was little.
Big stammer.
I feel like I stammer more now than I ever did in my life.
Yeah, big stammer guy. Big stammer guy.
I mean, I appreciate the compliment, though. That's okay. Thanks for having my back here. Erin Hewell.
For once. Jeez.
I'm sure she still voted for
it. Yeah, of course. That anything else would be improper.
Yes.
But yeah. Because on that episode, there is one vote and it is for Adam. So you can't be too nice. You gotta put like a little like sugar with the medicine.
Yeah. So everybody loves a backhanded compliment.
Everybody does love a backhanded compliment. Then we move on to Molly, and I'll read these two because they apply to my anger about Kingdom Hearts 3. Dennis Wakeman says, Kingdom Hearts 3 dropped the ball, but the last area is definitely the best part. I feel Dream Drop Distance is underrated. Birth by Sleep had the best characters, and 2 has the best gameplay. 2 is hands down the best game in the series.
Yeah.
Overall, I do think that Dream Drop Distance is underrated. Birth by Sleep is also pretty good. The problem with Kingdom Hearts is that like all of the games are on like so like they're all critical to the story, but they're all on like Birth by Sleep was on PSP and then fucking Chain of Memories was on the Game Boy Advance and then they eventually brought it to the PS2 and it wasn't good on the PS2 or the PS whatever PlayStation. Yeah. And it wasn't good or PS3 wasn't good on the PS3 and then because they changed how it worked and then. Then Dream Drop Distance is on the 3DS, and then you've got all the mobile games that also are weirdly critical to like playing the fucking like understanding what's going on. So that's the big problem with Kingdom Hearts. If they're all in like one standard thing, it wouldn't be as hard, and I don't think people would clown at it as much. But it's fucking nuts. Kingdom Hearts 3 is probably the weakest, and Dennis is right that the last area is definitely the best part. But my problem with the last area is that I felt like they were sprinting to get to the end, and so it felt rushed. It was a bunch of like really sick moments in like boom, boom, boom sequence that I feel like they rushed to get to.
Oh, definitely. So, I mean, I think they felt like they wasted, and I do definitely mean wasted, you know, 30 hours of that game literally everywhere else. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, people want good shit now.
It was the first game in the series, like Hercules and Olympus had been in the game from the beginning with the Colosseum. It was the first game that had Olympus as like a playable area. It was the first game that had Pixar worlds like Toy Story and Monsters, Inc. It was the first game. It had it wasted Big Hero 6. Crazy.
Yeah, it did.
The Frozen level was like super rushed and not good.
They just wanted to get, let it go.
They really did. It's crazy. But yeah, so Kingdom Hearts 3, weakest, but yeah, the last area is pretty cool. Elliot fucking Holmes. Great episode. Love the song. Love KH3. Sam, I will fight you. Elliot, I don't think you understand, my friend, the pure hatred that energizes my body when it comes to Kingdom Hearts is like it catapults me to One Punch Man levels with which I cannot be beaten. Like the angst and anger I feel when it comes to Kingdom Hearts is like it's too much. It's too much. It's too much for you. It's too much for anybody. So fucking you can try. You will lose. That's all I'm saying. Anyway.
Oh.
We've also got an Amazon delivery back there.
Yeah. Apparently I have a notification. I'm sure the weather will be weathering sometime today.
The National Weather Service. That is one of the big. I am plugged. I fucking can't do Alexa. I'm tired of that type of. I'm tired of smart everything.
Yeah, I think we literally just use it as a meteorologist every morning and don't talk to it until it does that fucking noise.
Yeah. Caitlin Taylor also commented on the Molly episode, unrelated to this episode, but I just saw IDK How live.
Jealous.
Very jealous. I've had to be like very judicious with my concert going experiences this year. And as much as I would have loved to see IDK How, there's just a lot going on. And so I've had to make some choices. Anyway, unrelated to this episode, but I just saw IDK How live and Dallin referenced his time at Panic as 8 years of a nothing coma with a crying emoji, a skull emoji, a coffin emoji, and a gravestone emoji.
God damn.
Yeah. God damn. It is actually because we've known this for a little bit that Dallin was not happy with his time on Panic at the Disco with Panic at the Disco. But yeah, that is wild. Just be like 8 years of nothing coma. That is so wow.
Yeah, that's almost as harsh as last episode with what the comment or the, the press of it doesn't reviewer. Move anything forward.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny talking about that and then last episode hearing Brendan be like, sometimes you just can't collaborate together, but sometimes you just need a friend on tour with you. And Alan was just like, you're bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically. So very nuts, very, very intense, very, very spicy.
Like, I'd be curious as the years go on, because I know that Nicole Rowe, like, his traveling bassist for the last couple of albums, like, definitely appreciated that time. So and she's with Incubus now, and I'm curious if, like, anybody else, what are you doing, little monster? Yeah, she's a bassist for a fuck off. Sorry, there's a cat doing cat things. I have the door open, so now they're just in here all willy-nilly because nobody else is home to distract them. Would be the piece of shit. Thank you. All right. But yeah, I'd be curious to think, like, or hear what some of the other people on those tours had thought. I mean, because Dallin obviously had the most interaction, like, one of the final solo people to have the most interaction before, like, it blew up in the super fucking
creative
writers.
Interaction.
Yeah. Man. And then, you know, Brendan goes his own way and writes his own music and just lets people play his music as opposed to somebody else having an input on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course we look at these and there's 400 fucking writers. So I guess who really did what in the end? Yeah. But surely it's still, you know, all part of Brendan Urie's pseudo fucking brain trust. But
yeah, who knows? Who fucking knows? I will also say on that episode, I have gotten 2 out of 3 votes for who was dumber, which I feel like directly tied to my thoughts about Kingdom Hearts personally, but I could be wrong. But that's where we're at. So I got 3 votes, 66.7. Adam's got Turdy Tween and Turd with 1 vote for Molly. So there we are. Thank y'all for writing in.
Yes.
And chatting up. So
good job going out there and supporting artists that we can't.
Yeah, thank you for that. A friend of mine went to go see Jiraiya in Seattle. Talked about Jiraiya on this podcast before.
Yeah.
He had a really great time. So
that sounds fun.
All about that.
I mean, the only concert we've got looking forward to right now is the Blink one. I guess I'm thinking about going to the emo orchestra thing here in Wichita because they've got Escape the Fate. I've always wanted to see Escape the Fate, but, you know, that was also 20 years ago when I really wanted to see Escape the Fate.
Sure.
I'll either pay and go feel really old or I'll pay and go really not listen to the new shit because whatever. Ronnie Radke really ruined that whole experience.
Ronnie Radke ruins everything.
Yeah. This is not a Falling in Reverse podcast.
No. And it never will be.
But no. Wish he'd fall in reverse into a grave.
Jesus.
Probably not. Actually, that was a little harsh. Wow. He's just a guy out there doing things, spitting his mouth
off.
Didn't
he like participate in a murder? Got away with it?
I don't know if it was a murder, but I think he had done some things that probably needn't be talked about on this podcast.
I'm Googling Ronnie Radke murder. Yeah, in May 2006, Radke was involved in a fight in Las Vegas that resulted in the murder of Michael Cook.
Oh.
Radke was not charged with murder, but he was indicted on battery charges, even though the person who shot Michael claimed self-defense. Jesus.
Well, all right.
So he assaulted the dude that then got shot. And died.
And the
guy that they were fighting was 18 years old.
Jesus! So.
Whoa, Ronnie Radke! Woo!
Somehow we always find troublesome, problematic people to talk about on this show.
We really do. Here's what I will say about, like, the industry and especially, like...
Oh, God. Yeah.
Like, pop punk and, like that era of, like... There's a lot of, like, really, like, bad people in music in general. And, like, it kind of happens.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look at current events. We're not going to talk about current events. But, yeah, current events would definitely say
that. You don't want to spend 20 minutes talking about P. Diddy?
Oh, my God. And the fall of P. Diddy, which, you know, fucking long overdue on that one, I'm sure. But,
yeah.
Oof.
Anyway. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question, Adam. In a segment, we have to call. Oh, yeah, the song.
Bailed out the song.
It is Victorious. We're talking about Victorious.
At first, you want to do like the pre pretty not
sure.
Not too enthusiastic about it. I feel like this is a weird opener, especially because I can't recall if we'd like actually listened to this single before or if we just waited until the album came out. But now, of course, you know, everybody's just annoyed by it, and I'm one of those people. But I think it's I think it's a fun song. Like, I will at least give it that. It is a very poppy boppy kind of song. It's just, I don't know, it's fucking weird that this is where we're at right after Too Weird to Live.
Yeah. And he kind of like, and again, he kind of like softened us into it with some of the stuff he was doing in between. Like, we covered like Love in the Middle of a Firefight, and he was like doing, you know, fucking shit with Travis McCoy and doing on Molly and stuff like that. So like, he was kind of softening us for a more like, I don't know, what would you like a more, I'm not going to say refined, because I don't think that's what it is. I mean, it is, but like, how would I put this?
I mean, it's a very processed, like a more, thing. Like
a more, a process is good. I think sterilized is what I was going to kind of like say.
God damn, yeah.
It's a little bit more sterilized.
Yeah.
Compared to some of the older stuff, like the older stuff, like even the more like put together Panic stuff is like very, it's still like kind of like has the rawness to it.
Yeah.
That I think that this album and stuff that he does going forward is missing. I think a lot of it, like, I like this album. I like Pray for the Wicked, you know, how we've been talking about Viva Las Vengeance, but I like those albums, but there is a sterileness to them that I think is very different from what we have been used to. And I think Victorious is like the poster child for that.
Very much so.
Like, if I take away the fact that it was like overplayed and like I got really tired of it, I think if I just take that away from it and I really focus in on it and be like, okay, I'm going to be objective, I'm going to focus in on the song, it's good. It's boppy. It bounces and it's entertaining.
Definitely.
But I think it is very obviously different.
Yeah.
In a way that at the time, I don't know, we could have predicted was necessary, was like going to be like a bad thing.
Sure.
I don't know about bad thing, maybe bad thing, I don't know, different thing, I
yeah,
know. But it was like it was very like right up front, here's what it is now,
right?
And I think that's kind of what it represents. So,
well, and obviously it was a few, you know, a few albums ago and before people fell off, but like, this is 2015. Fucking Vices and Virtues was 4 years before this. Like, that's weird to think of all of that. And I mean, we're not even going to go back to like to Touch Pretty Odd, because obviously that's not even a comparison that you can even start to make. But
right. Yeah.
But I mean, I think it's just a strange genre flip that nobody would have expected this band to do. And I like, as even with like everything that you had mentioned, I think like you can maybe an excuse. You could probably an excuse. I keep on wanting to say an excuse. You could probably excuse an artist for wanting to like venture off and do a feature and do something different and wanting to just kind of like play to that artist that they're featuring with, like play to that artist's strengths and what their genre is. But I think to like take all of that, and I don't feel like the writing was on the wall for it to wholly get here. But
sure,
it's just, God, such a strange, like strange voyage from one album to the other. Truly, I think, and like you said, like this is kind of the status quo for the next two albums after Death of a Bachelor 2. I don't feel like either of them do anything too crazy or too weird. Something equals genius,
too,
I guess.
Weird.
Yeah. So.
It was like, because we talked a lot about on Too Weird season, especially in the ranking episode, about how like Too Weird is like is trying to be a concept album, but doesn't push the concept nearly as much as it should.
Right.
Whereas this is like a complete spin in the opposite direction, where it's just like, okay, we're not doing concept at all. We're just doing this like pop rock, alternative rock type of deal. And it's going to be just the safest thing.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Truly. It's just going to be safe. Yeah. I think that's the problem. I think if I'm thinking about like what he does from here forward, it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he carved out a place for himself with it, but it's just Victorious is a very safe song. It is. There's some like inklings in there of like, and we'll talk about it when we actually talk about the song and like the lyrics and stuff like that. But there are some things in there that are just like, you can still see Brendan in there. But for the most part, it is a very, very safe song. It is a very, very safe album.
It is.
And that's kind of where I'm at with it. So I like it as a song, but it's just like, it is the precursor to like everything just being
right
safe.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, it's not like, okay, like this won't be a controversial take right here. Like, it's safe to say that likely if you were a fan of Panic of the Disco starting with this album, you are probably mm-hmm. a fan of everything that comes after.
Yeah, like I feel like if this was your first album, like you're probably the one that's mad at us for not liking Viva Las Vengeance. Like, I think likely. That's where likely what's going on. But I think if you had been like a fan of, not even like from the beginning, but if you were a fan of Panic, like starting with Pretty Odd or from the beginning or Pretty Odd or even Vices.
Yeah.
And then you kind of got into it beyond that. I think this is a much harder album to sort of swallow. Because of what had come before. I think especially if you got into Panic when Too Weird came out, this is very compared to Too Weird. Like, again, I think that Too Weird is not necessarily weird enough, but I think that it is in this context weird enough for this to be too not weird.
Right.
If that makes sense. Yeah. So
100%.
And this is the first song that you fuck. It was the first single, but like when you listen to the album, it's the first song you hear and it's just like, huh.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because we'll get there when we get there, but not for everything on this album to not even fully line up. No,
Hallelujah.
This.
Sorry, Hallelujah was the first single.
Sure.
But still. Hallelujah is the same way, but we'll talk about it later.
Like, there's a lot of safe bets on this album. My God.
my God.
Victorious, Hallelujah, like Death of a Bachelor, like, those are the very safe bets, and there's some on here that aren't. And I feel like some of those ones that are not are the ones that I've maybe grown on at least the most compared to these big poppy things. And it's not that like, yeah. I mind poppy Brendan Urie. It's just not my favorite genre of Brendan Urie, which is, you know, that safe bet that we had mentioned where he just goes down mm-hmm. for the rest of history.
Yeah. Victorious, according to a Billboard interview with Brendan Urie, is an upbeat pop-influenced song about Brendan Urie's lack of athletic skills. I was never really great at sports, never picked first for the team, but what I missed in that regard, I made up for in passion and intensity. That's truly Victorious, giving it your all when it's all you have, giving him hell to get a taste of heaven.
I don't.
That is a Travi McCoy lyric.
That is. Yeah.
What I missed in that regard, I made up for passion and intensity. That is literally what I lacked in looks, I made up for in passion. That is fucking peace sign.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Like it's. yeah. It's all good to not be good at sports, man. You didn't have to make this song about it.
Yeah. Let's read these credits and then we can get into the.
Get into the meat.
The meat. So. Credits produced by CJ Barron and Jake Sinclair, written by, and brace yourself, Morgan Kibbe, CJ Barron, Mike Viola, Jake Sinclair, Rivers Cuomo, oh man, Brendan Urie, and Bones. Doug. Vocals by
Boyd.
Background Boyd. Vocals by Jake Sinclair, Susie Shin, White C, and Morgan Kibbe. Keyboards Boyd.
Boyd.
Label Atlanta Records, Fueled by Ramen and DCD2. Bass
Boyd.
Boyd. Horn arranger Rob Mathis, recording engineer Susie Shin, mastering engineer Pete Lyman, mixing engineer Claudius Meetin Darfer. He's here, he's back. Trombone, Randy Andos and Michael Davis, tenor saxophone, Andy Schnitzer, David Mann, a multi-instrumentalist. Wow, they had to list that.
Yeah, they did.
Flugelhorn, Tony Cadleck, baritone saxophone, Dave Reichenberg, alto saxophone, Aaron Heek. Additional production, Susie Shin, trumpet, Tony Cadleck, and Dylan Schwab, guitar.
Boyd.
And then we've got covers. Oh boy, we're back. We've got covers by Calamity and Nate Wants to Battle. And then I guess there is a five song mashup by Rumi that samples Victorious. Have you listened to the RAC mix of Victorious?
No, I have not.
I've seen it and I've just never listened to it. So what I think we'll do, let's listen to that in our break, and then we'll talk about it on the next episode.
Sure.
How about that? Just briefly. Yeah. Okay. So there's a RAC mix by Panic at the Disco for Victorious. I don't know what RAC stands for, but we'll talk about that next episode when we figure it out. And then, of course, we've got the Portuguese translation.
Everybody's favorite.
Everybody's favorite. What do you got for tags?
Rock, lies. Pop, electropop, and pop rock.
Electropop, golly. Of course, this was a pretty popular song for Panic at the Disco.
Just a little bit.
It was released as a single on September 29th, 2015, before the album's release. The music video came out on November 13th, 2015. It was the final song released during Talon Week's tenure in the band, though it was never confirmed if he played bass on the single.
Wow.
It was also the band's first single in almost 10 years to chart on the Billboard Pop Songs chart since 2006's I Write Sins, Not Tragedies. Holy hell. That's crazy.
Shit.
As a single, it peaked at 89 on the Billboard Hot 100. It peaked at number 31 on the U.S. Adult Top 40 for Billboard.
Kinky.
It peaked at 30 for the U.S. mainstream top 40 on Billboard, and then it peaked at 7 for the U.S. hot rock and alternative songs on Billboard. At the end of the year in 2015, it ended up at position 67 on the U.S. hot rock songs, and then it ended up at position 23 in 2016, the album's release year for U.S. hot rock songs. So it rocketed up the charts there. Canada, Music Canada, it's certified gold with 40,000 units sold. The BPI in the UK, certified silver with 200,000 units sold. And in the United States, the RIAA, fuck the RIAA, it is certified double platinum with 2 million units sold. So, crazy.
Yeah, it's ludicrous. Somebody at ESPN also liked this song, which is why we hear it everywhere.
Yes, so it was like sports team used it for like goals and baskets and shit like that. It was on ESPN a fucking ton. It was used for highlight reels. It was fucking everywhere. And it feels like it was engineered to be the sports song.
Very much so.
Like was an intentional thing. Like he was like, I'm gonna be on ESPN.
Yeah. This is stadium rock to its core.
Yeah. Yeah. This is like, and that's what I think is like, and I think that's why it was the leadoff single. It's just like, if you take the cynicism out of it, it's just like, it's like a dart, dart, dart. It just like kind of hits you in the face really like, oh, okay, here we are.
Right.
And it just like kind of starts out with the kid chorus and all this stuff. It starts out slow with the clapping and then like the guitar, like it's like the, whoa. And it does that thing that I really like that Panic of the Disco does, where it's just like the quiet and the slow, and then it just punches you in the face. And so that's why it's kind of frustrating, because it's like, I it's doing stuff that I know Panic of the Disco is good at doing.
Correct.
But it's just so clinical. It's such a clinical application of it. So.
And, you know, again, not in the direction that we would think. Like, this correct. Is, yeah, this yeah, is yeah. highly processed. Like you said, very sterile, like a precision strike of just, this is a hit, which
you know, well, because that's the thing is like, we've now gotten into the era of Panic of the Disco where there is, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 writers on the song, including Brendan.
Right.
And so, and it's got two producers, and it's like, there is a lot of stuff going on. That credits list was huge. There's a lot of stuff going on in this song. And it was, I feel like, and I don't feel this way about all of the songs like from this era going forward or like this, but I think a lot to most of the songs feel like they're written by committee.
Definitely. Definitely. And I mean, now that we actually have it especially. In front of us, it's like, holy shit, it actually was.
Like, yeah, yeah.
For us
yeah.
to all always think that this was such a solo project, it fucking truly mm-hmm. wasn't. And I feel, you know, maybe Brendan swapping back and forth on Zoom or emails with his buddies about how to write it, maybe he was doing everything else mm-hmm. and everybody else was just performing it. That, like, I think that's where this whole thing now gets really muddy. Because exactly yeah. what was Brendan doing? Did he have this whole group of people write this song and then he did the music afterwards and then had all the other people come in and play mm-hmm. it? Or did he,
yeah.
you know, I don't know. Get Brendan Urie on the podcast.
It's interesting. Here's what I'll say about like Death of a Bachelor as an album compared to Pray for the Wicked. I think it's apropos to kind of mention this right now. Aside from, there's like a couple of songs on here. And it's not a lot, but there are a couple of songs on here that feel like a little bit more personal. But this yeah. album, I think specifically, was like the album that was just like, okay, we need to become mainstream. This is the album to do it. This Definitely. Is when we're this is what we're doing, right? Pray for the Wicked also feels like that in some ways, but overall, I think the vibe of Pray for the Wicked is way more personal.
Yes.
Even through it, Death of a Bachelor, despite being what it's called and like what the theme of that song is, doesn't feel nearly as personal as no. Pray for the Wicked does. And I think that's kind of fighting against it. Like Victorious, where he talks about like, I was never good at sports in school. But I don't get that.
Not at all.
From this no. song. Like, I don't get any of Brendan from this song. Like, he talks about like, oh, that's what the song is about. And that's why I wrote it to be Victorious. But it's just like, it's the most baseline fluff you could possibly say about the song.
100%.
You know what I mean? So it's just it's super weird. But yeah, that's just me.
Yeah, that quote very much just comes off as somebody asked me, I've got to pull something out of my ass. Here you go.
Yeah, just like this was what the committee said I need to say when somebody asked me about the inspiration for Victorious. So yeah. It's just like, oh, I was bad at sports and I was trying to write an anthem for people who were bad at sports. It's not what it is. It's not what it is.
And I feel like he tries to sell that in the video at least a little bit, but we'll get, you know, as always, we'll get to the videos when we get there. But even then, I feel like that's just, you know, that's played up for comedy. It's mm-hmm. not anything sincere about it. So, yeah, again, like you said, still can't hold it. Like,
yeah, and that's the other thing, too, is that you have to, like, really, you have to take it, like, when we're thinking about like songs, you have to take it at face value because like not everybody that listens to your album, listens to your song is going to take the time to go listen or watch the music video.
Sure.
And so, you know, if you're trying to like set up a theme, you can't rely on the music video to be the thing that helps you guide the theme. You have to like make the song stand on its own. Like I'll give the album 3 by the Lumineers as an example. One of my favorite albums of all time. I think I've talked about it before.
Sure.
But every song on that album has a music video and it tells the story of this family that the album kind of is thematically about, but the songs tell that story by themselves and the videos are just extra bonus that you kind of get from watching the videos. So if you're relying on the video, like if you need the video to explain the theme of what you're doing and the theme doesn't work in the song by itself, you have failed.
Yes.
That's just my opinion.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of really cool videos out there, but I don't feel like, and this is across all artists, right? A lot of cool music videos out there, but I feel like your video should heighten your song, not be the point of your song.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so if we're talking about Brendan Urie said that this song is about how he was bad at sports and he was trying to write a song that was like, it would like let those people feel victorious. Okay. Where is that vibe in the song? And why do I have to watch your comedic music video to understand that?
Yeah.
If it even is about that, you know what I mean? So if that's just, yeah.
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 Nugget.
Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's what I propose right now, Adam.
Yes.
Let's listen to the intro. Let's listen to verse one and let's listen to the pre-chorus. How's that sound to you?
I can dig it.
Let's do it. I know you need it. Do you feel it? Drink the water, drink the wine. So I mentioned this before, but you start out with this like, well, so the weird like, sound like as it's like, I like that. I think it's cool. It's like, oh, what's happening? And you got the kid chorus with like the clapping coming in.
Real party shit.
The way that he sings real party shit, the way that he sings that last victorious and hangs onto it and like extends it out, that is nuts. And again, we've talked about this before, despite how much we make fun of Brandon for being Brandon, he's a very talented musician. He's a talented singer, and he just does shit with his voice. That's just like how. And so the fact that he, like the way he holds that note, and then like the way that his voice like goes, like it's like strains at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's great.
That's good.
Like that's real good stuff. He's a fucking like, he's a talented guy. Like I know that we spend a lot of time, right, like talking shit, and we can. We have a podcast. Yeah. Like this is our thing.
Yeah. We reserve the right to talk shit.
Yes, we are fuckers. Men in our 30s that can talk shit on into microphones and people listen to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But did you know, listen. Did you know anybody can do, they'll just let anybody do a podcast.
Yeah. Right.
Did you know that you don't have to have any like special credentials? You can just do a podcast.
Yeah.
And then somehow people listen to that. And then you're doing a podcast. Yeah. So I just throwing that out there.
My favorite here, quick tangent. My favorite is when people ask, how's the podcast? Like, what do you want me to say? Like, it's good? It's terrible? Like, it's just a fucking thing that we do. I don't know how it is. I can tell you that people listen to it. I can tell you and I enjoy making it. But especially when people
that, like
if people don't listen to it and they're like, how's a podcast? Like, go, I don't know.
It's not like a child. Like, I don't have to, like, feed and water it. Like, I'm like, it's not like it exists. It's there.
Right. Where can I find it? Everywhere. I mean, if you're interested, it's just go. But if you're not,
pick a place.
Please don't talk to me about my podcast. I spend multiple hours talking on the podcast as it is.
Hey, no, but okay. I don't mind talking about the podcast. That's not a problem.
Sure.
I just like, but like how's the podcast? Or like, you know, you're doing good. Like, I don't fucking listen to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Fucking, what do you want me to tell you?
Well, it's,
am I going to tell you it's bad?
I also don't mind talking. I don't mind talking about it to people who either A, listen, or B, have an idea of who Panic at the Disco is.
Right.
Like,
right. Like, I just like I'm, I don't know. I can't explain. Like, it's fine. It's a Panic at the Disco podcast.
Yeah.
What, like, do you like Panic at the Disco? No. Okay, go away.
Podcast,
what do you
bad.
Want? What do you want from me? you probably will not get as much out of the podcast as somebody who likes Panic at the Disco.
Right.
It might be a place for discovery. You're welcome, but I don't know. It's a very niche. We're very niche people.
I mean, we're just kind of in the weeds of Panic at the Disco. That's how it is.
We're in the weeds of life.
Back to the other point. You know, I know that we talk a lot of shit, but I feel like we've always done our best to like make sure that we get the feeling and emotions across that we do appreciate what Brendan Urie has done, at least vocally. Maybe not through everything, but the man is a hell of a fucking singer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, as much as this song might not be it, I think like there are parts of this where it's like, oh, goddamn, that boy can get it.
Mm-hmm. And so those first, the first lines in the intro, tonight we are victorious, champagne pouring over us. All my friends are glorious. Tonight we are victorious, which is like just a very like basic, like this is highlighting, like this is celebratory.
Right.
We are a vibe. This is we're partying. We feel great. That's what this is. It's not like, it's just highlighting like this feeling of like winning.
Yeah.
There is a verified annotation from 8 years ago from Boyd on here on this intro. And here he is again. The song has a Sinatra-esque Beyonce beat thing, which is not.
No.
You can't do that.
Again, just people be saying shit.
It's illegal.
Yes.
It's an illegal statement. Sinatra-esque Beyonce beat thing. It makes me want to tackle something. I wanted to have something to amp me up. It's about having that confidence and being like, yeah, I could be the greatest. I just have to push myself to do it. I just kept chanting S-P-O-R-T-S the whole time in the studio. It was fun.
Man.
Why? Bro.
I don't even know where to go with that.
Bro.
Like, as known sports hater, will say sports ball non-ironically, I still feel like you're reaching by just saying I was chanting S-P-O-R-T-S.
I am a sports. I'm a notorious not sports hater.
Sure.
I'm a notorious sports lover, if I'm being fully real. And it's just like, and as somebody who likes sports that is not like precious about sports, like I fully am okay with joking about sports and being like, blah, yeah, yeah. But that is like fully like, go sports, win points statement.
Right.
He has no idea what the fuck he's talking about.
No, not at all. I do love the continuation of that line of, you know, the song has a Sinatra-esque Beyonce beat thing. It makes me want to tackle something. I don't feel like you've nailed either of those vibes then, if this is what you're.
Yeah. Every time I listen to a Frank Sinatra song, I'm like, I just want to tackle something.
Yeah. You know, when I hear Texas Hold'em, I just want to beat the shit out of things.
I was going to say, when I hear my way, oh, just want to tackle something.
Oh,
my New York, God. New York, let's fucking go.
Irreplaceable really makes me want to throw down. And just
right. But like the other thing too is that he said, like he mentions the song has a Sinatra-esque Beyonce beat thing. And beyond trying to parse how ridiculous that statement is,
okay,
just putting that aside for a second, if we just separate them, Sinatra, Beyonce.
Yeah.
This song does not sound like Sinatra.
No.
This song does not sound like Beyonce.
No.
I don't know what the fuck he's talking about.
No. I feel like somebody misquoted him. I had to have. I'd hope. Maybe he was talking about another song.
Yeah, I would love to hear Frank Knowles just like go off. But yeah, that's where we're starting. But ignoring all that, again, the kid chorus singing the song and then him like fading in that last victorious and holding that note and then the scratchiness into verse one, I think is good. I think it sounds cool.
Yes.
I just wish he wasn't trying to make it sound like something it's not in these interviews.
Absolutely. Anyway. Like, it's cool to just say that you made something rocky. Like, you could have just said,
yeah.
You could have just said, I made something for the Rocky soundtrack and be like, cool, got it. Vibe sold.
Yeah.
No questions asked.
Yeah.
Mighty Ducks 4 right here. Like, goddamn.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't have to be Frank Sinatra Beyonce-esque beat. Like, what does that mean? That means nothing to me. No. Those words go in my head and then they float out like a butterfly. Float like a butterfly. Yeah. How about that? I didn't plan that. But yeah, they just kind of like exit my mind. It's just like those are nothing words. But then it gets into verse one, And again, it slows down. It's like that. I love that. That guitar is really good. And then it's just like double and the way that like he goes down. Like it's cool. Like it and then like the second half of the verse, it adds more to it.
Right.
Like it adds more to the instrumentation behind it, and he's still doing the interesting. It hurts and da da stops. We it's cool. It's good. It does vibe, and it feels like Brendan is like the Brendan that we know and love is shining through there. It's just like there's that veneer in front of it. It's just like this is too processed.
Very much so. I mean, you can tell that he's doing a lot, and I feel like the only thing that, if I had to be the nitpicky one, like it seems so forced that he's doing a lot instead of like this just natural kind of feeling that doesn't make it bad. Yeah. Like it still makes it semi-exploratory and like fun, but I feel like it's just kind of like right in line with everything else that we've said about this song, where it's like it just feels so intentional that you feel like you feel the victorious part of it, but like you don't feel anything beyond that. And I guess, you know, at the face value of a song, you don't have to, but
yeah.
If this were the Pretty Butterfly version, I want him to go back into the cocoon.
Yeah.
Just a little bit longer.
I love the annotation on this, because he has another annotation with verse one. The first two lines, the double bubble disco queen through Killer King, that first half of the verse. Lyrically, this is from Brendan. Lyrically, this song came about like a sneeze. I like how all these words sounded back to back. Good alliteration and rhyme. The late, great Steve McQueen is dead in the ground, so he was cool, but also he literally is cool. So what Brendan is telling me here is that this is nonsense.
Yes, very much.
He's literally telling me this is nonsense. He literally saw these words and was like, I like the way you sound, Magic Man, and just put a bunch of words together.
Yeah. I mean, 100%.
Because I was going to sit here and try and analyze double bubble disco queen headed to the guillotine.
Yeah.
They're nonsense words.
It's just,
he just did it because they rhymed good.
It's gobbledygook.
It's gobbledygook. It's straight up gobbledygook.
Yeah. Which I guess, you know, good. Which, you can have that.
which then takes us into the second half of the verse. It hurts until it stops. We will love until it's not. Until it's not what? It's
just not.
Hurts?
Yeah.
It's not hurts. Huh?
That's, yeah.
Words? Huh? I'm going to be so real right now. And this is half a joke and half like kind of serious. We'll love until it's not hurts. Sounds like something you would say.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
It's not hurts.
It's
like,
not
how's hurts. Are you like, like Adam fell down, go boom a couple days ago. This isn't real. This isn't real. This is just a scenario. Adam fell down, go boom a couple days ago, hurt his arm. I go, Adam, how's your arm doing? He goes, oh, it's not hurts no more.
Yeah.
That sounds like something Adam would say.
It is.
Walking through the thesaurus upside down. It hurts until it stops. We will love until it's not.
I love it.
Which, if I had to transform this into something that makes sense, we will love until it stops hurting.
Yeah, I think that's the only literal, like the only logical spin that you could put on this, truly.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. I don't get it. It's gobbledygook. Yeah. It's literally gobbledygook. He's admitted that he just likes words that rhyme good. That's all it is.
It's just one of those things.
I'm a killing spree in white.
Yeah.
Eyes like broken Christmas lights. What?
It's just fun shit to sing, right? Like, that's it.
Yeah. 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 Because, like, if I had to, like, be generous about, like, the set, like, eyes like broken Christmas lights, where it's just like, like Christmas lights are very bright, but like broken Christmas lights are dim. So like your eyes are dead.
Right.
And like your killing spree in white, this bright colors where you've done these things and like you can't like hide it or wash it away because you're in this bright white, but your eyes are dead when you're doing it. That's my generous application of this, but also it doesn't fit with the vibe of the song. Like, why is this happening here? What is happening?
Yeah.
What is this?
If you had to even just draw deeper, like people think Christmas lights are beautiful. When you break them, they're just little broken voids of glass. Beautiful thing, not pretty no more. Basically.
Yeah. I will say, I'm a killing spree in white.
Ah! Yeah.
I like that. I like that. I've always liked that, and yes. I still like that.
Yes. This is so fun.
Pre-chorus. Like,
truly.
Yeah. Because here's the thing. It doesn't necessarily need to make sense because it is just like this punchy vibe. Like, if you think about like pop music, most pop music, how much of it actually makes sense?
Right. How much of this would you actually say anywhere? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
like this tracks for like, he is trying to do a popular stadium like anthem song. It doesn't need to be, it doesn't need to make sense.
No, it doesn't have to make sense. Well, and on top of that,
it doesn't.
We have plenty of songs, you know, throughout this podcast that we've basically tried to decipher, and it's like, no, it's literally just there at face value. Like, there's nothing else. There's no meaning. This is probably the most meaningless song that we've ran into so far, probably. But, mm-hmm. And you know, as a true pop song, he's got his one pop culture reference in there as Steve McQueen. You know, everybody's got to drop name drop something so that we've got the one.
Yeah. And it kind of translates to the pre-chorus has more of like a thematic, like, acuity to it.
Yeah.
But like, it's still nonsense. My touch is black and poisonous and nothing like my punch drunk kiss. Yeah. I know you need it. Do you feel it? Drink the water, drink the wine. But like, before we get into like the words, like the, like the way that it gets faster. Cool.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Like that.
Right.
It's doing interesting stuff, but it's just like in this blender of like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. I mean, I think all of the tempo things throughout the pre-chorus are pretty cool. Like the way, yeah, the drink the water, drink the wine part. Just, it's very satisfying to hear, kind of.
Yeah. In an interview with Sugarscape, Brennan spoke about his determination to fight back when others get in the way of his goal to live victoriously. Giving him hell to get a taste of heaven. So I say, give him a taste of your poison. Turn up the crazy. Tonight we are victorious. So that's about the pre-chorus.
Sure.
Sure.
I guess. I mean, if that's.
I guess.
No, man. None of this is working for me.
Because here's the thing, like, the song is like, so it's meant to be this like allegory or like anthem for people who are like bad at sports, but like they're victorious if they just work hard. It just gets edgier. Like, it tries to get edgier as the song goes on. We'll get there when we get to like verse two.
Right.
But it's just weird. So let's listen to the chorus. How does that sound? Do you have more to say about this first section, or do you want to listen to the chorus?
I think let's do the goddamn chorus.
Let's do the goddamn chorus. Shockingly, the chorus is not this like driving thing that I would expect out of like this powerful, like, it's kind of slow. And it's very like steady and rhythmic. It's like, yeah, not what I would expect. The excitement and like the pumping, the driving energy comes after the chorus. Until we feel all right. And the guitar comes in. Like, that's where like the driving energy comes from, which is very strange to me. I kind of dig it, but when I hear, do you feel it? Drink the water, drink the wine. I'm expecting a push after that. And you don't get the push until the end of the chorus. And it feels strange.
It's not like whiplashy bad. And looking at it, you know, this first chorus is literally three lines.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fucking weird. I've got the annotation popped up here.
Yeah. Do you want to read it?
Yeah, I've got you. So Brendan,
Boyd.
Said, Boyd. I wanted the chorus to be a little more straightforward than the verses. No shit. If you read the news, if you read the news and watch these celebrities, they are just crazy partying like no one has ever partied before. And that's really what it was. I want to set myself off like a firework. Shoot off into the sky. That's how amped I was feeling.
Oh my fuck. Oh my fuck. And that's kind of what it is. Like, there's not a lot to analyze here, but it's literally just like, If we take specifically the shooting fireworks, like it's the 4th of July, and it ties into the wash up celebrity line, fireworks are beautiful and they're grandiose and they're exciting.
Yes.
But once they're gone, they're gone. Like they go up, they're exciting and then they fizzle.
Yeah.
And that's what he wants to do. He just wants to live these powerful, vivacious moments and run himself out and until we feel all right. Like he's trying to fuel himself through this vapid existence.
Right. Which I feel like
in a way that doesn't make sense, which I think is on purpose here.
Right. And I feel like this kind of thought process, like, you know, being the washed up celebrity and doing the big celebrity life, like he touches on elsewhere and better, because again, like this is just a poppy song. We're not trying to solve the world's problems, but I feel like he keeps this motif and I don't think like he overdoes it, maybe every now and then, like especially towards the end of the next album. But I think like it's a cool idea that Brendan is one of those people that will like actually embrace that. Like, yeah, we're rich, we're famous, we do dumb shit.
Yeah.
You hate us because you ain't us.
Right. I do like the kind of flip to it where it's just like the idea that we're going to live like a wash up for celebrity. We're going to shoot fireworks and fizzle out until we feel all right. But that's never going to happen because like if you're living like this and you're just going to fizzle out and fade away. You're never going to feel all right. So the idea, I do like the juxtaposition of just like we're going to party and we're going to do this until we become fulfilled, but like you'll never become fulfilled from this. So like it's kind of interesting. I don't know if I'm giving him too much credit there or not, but that's what I get from the words.
I think I could fuck with it. I mean, truly. Yeah. It's the only kind of read through of this if we had to give any meaning to it.
Yeah. Verse 2. Again, verse 2 makes more sense to me than verse 1 does as like a thematic thing.
Right.
I think I'm like a scarf trip. It's all up the sleeve. Like this, everything about him is like surface level. Like I'm showing you a trick. Like I'm showing you a thing. And then I taste like magic. Okay, Brendan, there it is. Waves that swallow quick and deep.
Oops. Hey.
Which is like an innuendo at the same time as it's like he's overwhelming.
Right.
As like a personality.
Yeah.
Also, I taste like magic. I love that. Again, he's doing the interesting things with the voice.
Yeah.
Throw the bait, catch the shark. So Genius says bleed the water red, but I've always heard paint the water red. Am I crazy? Am I turning up the crazy right now?
Maybe. I don't know. I only think that, I mean, bleed the water red, I guess, would make sense. But, you know, us, between the two of us, always mishear something.
Yeah, I've got it playing. I think, hold on.
Yeah.
No, he's saying bleed. No, he's saying bleed. I'm hearing it now that I know that the word is bleed. But, like, I've always thought paint the water red, which I think either one makes sense. But whatever. 50 words for murder, and I'm every one of them.
Just angsty for the sake just of angsty. Being angsty.
It's just angsty. Just yeah. Like I said, it just becomes edgier.
Yeah, a little
it
bit.
It becomes edgier.
I feel like that line alone also to me has just never fit in with this song.
No, like that. But, no.
Like there's another song for that line that it could have worked in. I mean, the cool little thing that he's doing with his voice there, like, great. Save it for something else. Like, I think if mm-hmm. you just stop that verse at the fourth line, like, you'd have been good. And then you spit out this crazy sounding, like, Charles Manson fucking sentence. And you're like, what the fuck? Like, that's the vibe check line right there. Like, are you going to drink the water and drink the wine? Drink what this man is selling you. Drink his Kool-Aid because he painted the water red with sugar. Like, I don't fucking know, man. Like, it's always just been one of those things where I'm like, this is fucking odd. Pretty fucking off, that line.
Pretty fucking odd. And that's kind of it.
Yeah, a little bit.
Right? Like, the pre-chorus comes in, then the chorus comes in again. And the chorus, and I'll play the chorus part. I'll play the bridge and the chorus. We're not going to talk because it's the same thing over again. But it goes, they say shooting fireworks like it's the 4th of July. And then it goes, and then here's, and this might hikey be my favorite part of the song. The bridge where they just say this, the kids singing "The Tonight We Are Victorious" part. And Brendan is coming in there. The bass underneath it. And it's like while they're singing, and Brendan jumps in every so often. It's the most head banging part of the song.
It is.
It just has like a rhythm to it that I really, really enjoy.
I think like the back half of the song does a really good job at being that rock song that it's, you know.
Yeah. And then the chorus, Brendan sings the chorus again, but like most of the instruments cut out, and it's just like this one like keyboard like arrangement underneath it. Yeah. So it's very like simple. And then it goes into the outro, which is just the bridge again over the intro / bridge over the music, and then it kind of just ends. So what I'll do is I'll play that last part just so we can hear it. Because I really, really do like the bridge a lot. And we'll kind of get wrapping up. So overall, it's a good song. It's interesting, but like it has that like, again, it doesn't make any fucking sense. It's a zero sum sense equation.
Yeah.
And that's fine. It's a pop song. It's meant to be like a popular like pop stadium rock song. But I think where it loses point, again, we talked about it before we started talking about the lyrics. It's very processed. It is written by committee to be a popular song. Brendan is doing interesting things with his voice and with the way that things are being presented in the song, but because it has that thin veneer of just like, it is, not, it just feels inauthentic.
Yeah. Like this kind of, you know, it's the first lyric of the fucking song, right? Like, this is the double bubble disco queen. Like, whatever the fuck that means is whatever the fuck this song is. Like, it's just strange. Not like strange in a bad way. It's just what a thing.
Yeah, what a thing. And then, of course, one final point. The song has a Sinatra-esque Beyonce beat thing going for it, apparently. Still somewhere have no idea what there. The fuck that means.
Not at all.
Somewhere in there, yeah, not at all. And that is Victorious.
Yeah, song one down.
Yeah.
No violence.
Song one down. I love this comment on Genius. Good song. If you haven't heard it before, then one, how did you get to this page? And two, listen to it.
Okay. Sure. Yeah.
Sure. I mean,
you can fucking Applebee's and hear this fucking song. To this day, you can go to any Applebee's.
I probably would hear this in a Chili's somewhere. Yeah. This is an interesting comment to me. We won't spend much because this is a longer one, so which is fine. That's fine with me. But this is the last comment that we'll read because I find this so interesting. This song is at the top of my playlist, followed by. Okay, please tell me you're not looking at the comments.
I'm not.
You don't know what this comment is.
Nope.
Okay, because we're gonna play a little game.
All right. Oh no.
This song is at the top of my playlist, followed by blank. They both, but this one in particular, pump me up. Got to love good music. What song do you think is their other pump up song followed by Victorious? It's not a panic song.
Oh, it's not a panic song.
Oof. No, it is a different song. They both pump me up.
It's going to be fucking Bohemian Rhapsody.
It's not. I'll give you two more guesses.
Let's see.
I don't think you'll get it, but.
Oh, man. Tell me, is one irreplaceable? That would be fucking awesome to have a Beyonce song. It's damn
not,
it.
It's not irreplaceable. It's also not a Frank Sinatra song. I'll give you. No. All right. This song is at the top of my playlist, followed by Little Talks by Of Monsters and Men. They both, but this one in particular, pump me up. Got to love good music. You know. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's got energy. I'll give them that. But if I'm like, it's not a pump up song.
No, I don't think that's going to be pumping me up for shit.
No. Anyway, thank you all for joining us on this first episode of, this first song episode of season 5. Death of a Bachelor.
Season 5.
Season 5. Next time, next week, we're gonna listen to that RAC remix of Victorious, like we discussed, and then we're going to talk briefly. We'll probably use the pre-roll to talk about it just to get it out of the way. And then after that, it's Don't Threaten Me with a Good Time.
So
All right. So we're gonna talk about that. But until such time next week, can't wait to talk to you. Let's see. This episode's coming out. And the week after that,
the 8th.
I'm going to be in England when Don't Threaten Me with a Good Time comes out.
9th. Oh, that one. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll be
well, the ninth, I will be, coming back from Philly.
Yes.
The 16th when Don't Threaten Me with a Good Time is scheduled to come out is I'll be in England. So cool stuff.
Love it.
Cool vibes,
all these adventures.
Yeah. One's for pleasure, one's for business. So
I don't know. They both sound pretty pleasurable.
Pretty pleasurable. Anyway. Love you, bye.
Bye bye.
Pretty the pressure bone.